this Sabbath, we will complete the overview of the book of Job. We have learned, I hope we have been able to look at and understand a few things about the, quote, viewpoints of what God is like from each one of Job's three friends, and also a viewpoint of what God thinks about God. So basically you have four different paradigms, and then there's a fifth one, and that's when the young man, Elihu, had a fifth viewpoint, if I can use that, or opinion, he called it, of what the Creator of heaven and earth is like. And so we have, I suggest, if it's altogether possible, I find it very fascinating when you study the book of Job, that if you can, just write down or copy statements that Job made about God throughout the entire book and ignore his friends, and then make another one of just comments of one of his first friend, what he said, comments of the second friend, what he said, and comments of the third friend, what he said. So you have an overall view of how they viewed God. And, of course, take an overall view of Elihu. But Elihu's, when he talked, no one talked back at him, so it's all about him. You can get his right out of the Bible right there. Don't have to sort it too much. And now we're coming to the conclusion, or, quote, as to say, to the end of the book of Job. And we're going to highlight certain phrases in the book of Job, starting in verse 38. Chapter 38 of the book of Job. This is where God now starts speaking. Yahweh. Now, you kind of get the flavor here that God was not soft-spoken at this point in time. And, you know, Job was not soft-spoken about God either, and neither was his three friends soft-spoken to Job. But Elihu also was strong-spoken against Job, primarily, and secondarily to his friends. And now we have to hear what the subject matter or the conclusion of the story is all about. My first question I want to ask, or not question, but statement I want to ask, or to tell you, should I say that way? Remember that how people viewed God is very important. Because when you start looking at these three men and the fourth one, it really is a viewpoint of several, about four different types of people all around about you. And maybe you yourself are of one of those four. Counting Job, maybe five. So the reason why the book of Job was written for wasn't just for Job's sake, but for ours. That we may know and understand how human beings, of and by themselves, accuse people. And here now God is coming through with pretty powerful words. And, of course, it's against Job. Verse 2, who are you? This Job darkens counsel. Why words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man, Job. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Now this is God coming out of what's called a whirlwind. Remember we talked about whirlwind before? What's a whirlwind? It's like a tornado. Tornadoes are very frightening. They destroy things. Remember the tornado destroyed the house where his sons were, ripped everything to pieces, and everybody died from the tornado. So God comes down and talks to Job, and he's talking to him in a tornado. Pretty powerful. We are on Job 38 chapter, And I started with verse 2. And throughout the story of Job, Job kept accusing God of an awful lot of things. From the very beginning of his trials to the end of this, well, to the end of Elihu, who had spoken differently. So he always complained that God did not hear him, that God is unfair, that God does not listen to people, that God is a sovereign between all by himself, and he's kind of, in a sense, arrogant. Yes. And here, Job, Elihu, he did not talk back to Elihu, remember? He couldn't answer the young man. And the young man, quote, was not a friend of Job. He was not Job's companion, but he was there. For those 7 days, remember 7 days? You're sitting there, all of them are sitting there for 7 days, and finally Job talked. And you kind of get through the story here that all this conversation happened in one day. You kind of picture this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth argument. You sit there and you read it in a short period of time. And if you've ever been in an argument, I know you haven't, I have, but if you've been in an argument, you're not always cool and calm and collective. And with Job's case, he was defending himself against every charge his three friends gave against him. And Elihu said, "You guys don't know what you're talking about." Who was not a friend of the threes, nor was he a friend of Job. He's just there. Very interesting coincidence, of course. Yes.
He was not his friend.
Doesn't say so. He only mentions three friends.
Oh, okay.
Only mentions three friends. At the very opening there, he says his three friends came and talked with him. You know, they, remember, these three friends were like kings. Elihu wasn't. Elihu, rather, was not. He was the youngest one of the bunch, but he never said, ever was spoken of as a friend. Now, God here is not friendly with Job. He's kind of upset with him, wouldn't you think? He says, verse 3 now, "Prepare yourself like a man." You know, he was sitting on the ashes. Verse 4. "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth, Job? Tell me if you have understanding." Pretty strong words. "Who," verse 5, "determined its measurements?" "Surely you know, Job." Pretty powerful words, right? "Surely you know, Job." Really? So you figure Job right now is quaking. It is, not quaking his boots because he had nothing on. But nonetheless, yeah, there he was. And God continues on, verse 7. We're going to go through this pretty quick. "When the morning stars sing together and all the sons of Elohim shout for joy or shout in the seas with doors, when it bursts forth issues from the womb, when I made the clouds its garment and the thick darkness its swallowing band. Where were you, Job? Surely you know, don't you, Job? Surely you have understanding, Job. Answer me, Job." Verse 12. So we'll go through it pretty quick. "Have you commanded the mornings since your days? Because, or the cause of the dawn is known, its plate." Do you know how to bring forth the morning, Job? Do you know, can you command the sun to come and sun to go, Job? Do you even know, Job, where it comes from? Or in a sense, how it works. Even if Job understood, doesn't say he didn't, understood how the earth rotates around the sun, he couldn't explain to how that happens. We have great scientists, it's gravity. Okay. Who invented and created gravity? Do you know? I don't. I mean, I know who did, but I don't know how it works, because I'm not that smart. I didn't lay the foundations, I didn't do the measurements. And God is saying to Job, neither did you. Verse 16. Have you entered the springs of the sea? That's a very interesting phrase. Basically, it means under the ocean, and under deep in the ocean, there is water that keeps pouring through the entire deep ocean. There's deep underground rivers. Then they call it springs because something's coming up from somewhere. Water's coming up from the earth, goes into the ocean. Then he makes the next statement, he says, or have you walked in the depth? Whoa. So far, nobody has ever gone down to the depths of the ocean and got out of their little cubicle and walked on the ocean floor. They set instruments down there. They set machines down there. They had to make sure they wouldn't crush to pieces, but they got them down there. But no one's walked on the depths. Oh, we got, but we walk on the moon. We're trying to walk on the Mars. However, that's not the issue with God, because he said to Job, have you walked down there? Who do you think walked on that depth? Oh, hey, he did. He knows where it's at. He knows how deep it is at. Continue on now. I find this very fascinating, verse 17. I find it very fascinating what God has made to Job, because it's a very powerful question. Have the gates of death been revealed to you? What do you think that means? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? So what did you say? You know, and the Messiah said something about the ecclesia. You want to use that word? The gates of hell will not prevail. Doesn't mean they don't shut. They will not remain closed. Okay. What about you, Job? The gates of death, are they real? Can you actually, Job, open up the gates of death? Bring forth life. Is that what this thing means? One way of looking at that thing, right? Reminds me of what the Messiah said about the gates of hell will not prevail. Guess who gets to open up them gates? Guess who opens up the gates of the dead? Well, the Messiah said, they will hear my voice and they'll come up. When they hear, when I tell them to come, they'll come up. Job, can you do that? Next one. Have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? Do you know if there are doors? Do you know there are doors of death? So what are they, Jeff? What is the doors? Verse 8, latter part of it. Tell me if you know all this. Okay, Job, how about you? How about me? How about anybody else? His three friends, by the way, were also there hearing what the whirlwind was saying to him, because they also heard. So it's pretty powerful words, don't you think? And if you know all this, tell me. Do you know? Were you born when it happened? Or were you so old in age that you remember the very beginning, way back, and the foundations? Were you there? Well, of course, you know the answer is obviously not. And he goes on, verse 22, have you entered the treasury of snow? You know how to make snow? Well, of course, I'm a scientist. I could do that. Really? Not if God doesn't bring forth that knowledge. You can't do nothing. Or have you seen the treasury of hail? Can you bring forth hail? Yes. Can you make hail? Yes.
I got to watch the mountains where you look for fires, and when I looked up at the sky, it was literally split into dimensions.
Oh, I believe that.
And that scripture came to mind from
Job. Is
that
right?
And I'm like, oh, look at the invisible boundary lines. It's snowing here, it's sunny here, it's raining there, and storming within these boundary lines.
And it can go no farther than God says.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, now we know we live in the 21st century, right? That's all phony. Scientists tell us the truth, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Just make sure you know. Verse 28, just quickly. Has the rain a father? Who creates rain? Job. Who brought forth rain? Job. Can you do that, Job? Well, who has brought forth the dew, Job? Can you bring forth dew, Job? Where were you? Tell me if you know, for of course, you were there. Like God is almost cynical here, isn't he? Being a little bit sarcastic toward the man named Job. Well, sometimes, since he's the creator, number one, he can make you and me look like a fool. And it's actually, we'll learn at the end of this book, it's a great blessing that God makes us look like a fool. It really is. At the end of this book, we'll see. So whenever time you have been arrogant or what's that phrase? I'm smarter than the average person. Of course, the average person is right around about you, but you think you're the smarter than everybody else in the room because you're above average and everybody else is average or below average, but you're above average, you know? Well, that's arrogance. That's pride. Well, in a sense, God has to knock that down. In a sense, when you look at Job and his paradigm of God and himself, consider himself smarter than his three friends. But he didn't answer back the last man, Elihu. By the way, do you remember what Elihu means? Good.
God, friend of God, or?
My God. He is my God. Who is the word for he? He is my God. First part of his word is El. Which means God. The middle letter is an I, which means for my. And last is who, means he.
Then I would ask this. Maybe the reason that Job did not respond to Elihu is God didn't give him a chance. God is like, I've had enough of this.
It very well could be. But I find also God did not condemn Elihu at all. He said, you don't have to repent for him. He didn't have to give you a sacrifice, Job. He's not one of them that has to go and offer and sacrifice, which the other three did. And look at this one. Verse 22, we talked about the treasury of snow and hail, which I have, verse 23, reserved for time of blessings. No, trouble. Now, have you ever been in a snowstorm that was so great? And you watch the weather people and say, boy, I should be glad when that northeastern finally stops. Well, it came because God created the snow, God created the hail, God created the rain for a reason. Trouble. God causes trouble? Anyway, for the day of battle and war. It's kind of interesting. how that works. Day of battle and war. You remember in World War II, and it was D-Day, they call it. The weather was so bad, they didn't know if they should go. But they went anyway. The weather was bad on a particular date for them not to go. And it turned just right for them to go on the D-Day. And it was a heavy decision for Eisenhower to make because he didn't know exactly what was going on. But nonetheless, he ordered the invasion. And if it wasn't done on that particular day, they would not have been able to make it. And it was still cloudy enough, stormy enough, that the enemy couldn't see the ships. I wonder, did God have anything to do with that? So they do that in days of battle and war? Oh, okay. Anyway, let's overlook that one. Down there in verse 28, I said, who brings forth the rain? And who brings forth the ice? How does ice, water, become solid and hard as a rock? Can you explain that, Job? Well, yeah, temperature goes down. Really? Well, I'm glad you knew that, Job. How about you? Do you know how to make ice? Yeah, refrigerator. Put it in the ice, and then it breaks on it. I got one of those fancy refrigerators. I know how to make ice, see? And I just plug it in, turn it on, and think automatically makes ice for me. And it says, oops, I can't make it anymore. It's too full. And it stops. See? It obeys me, right? Don't tell me how many times I've had to repair that. Anyway. Verse 33, it says, do you know the ordinance of heaven? Do you know how they are ordered? Do you know the commandments? Do you know how I command them? Do you know how I do that? Can you set the dominion over the earth? Hey, has not the earth have stars over it? And does not the earth have, those stars have dominion over, not under, but over the earth? Who put them in place, Job? So we kind of got a picture here where God gets a little bit irritated. Verse 36, I think, very fascinating. He's talking to Job, remember? All right? And, you know, he makes a statement here. Who has put wisdom in the mind? Job, who put wisdom in your mind? Did you, Job, put wisdom in your mind? Who did it? Yes.
There are some people that are very, very ignorant.
Yes.
And so that is an interesting thing when you think, you know, because from the time I was very little, I don't know why, but I had this thing. I just thought, I want wisdom. That fascinated me, the idea of wisdom. And I don't even know where that came from.
Yeah. And remember, Elihu's the three friends, their wisdom is worthless. Because they're wisdom of men, not the wisdom of God. In this particular case, God is saying, where did wisdom come from, Job? Job, you're not wise. Job, your thinking is off. Every one of these guys are thinking was completely off. And why would God go out of his way to record and keep the book of Job for us to understand today? All because it's just history? Or well, Job deserved it. Well, I'm not Job. I'm somebody else. I'm Richard. I'm not Job. Right? Be careful. I better be careful in that. Let's drop down to verse 36, the latter part of it. Who can give understanding to the heart? That's getting down inside the person, isn't it? How your understanding has to be connected to the heart. Wisdom goes to the mind, the heart comes. And the heart must go to understanding the wisdom that God gives. That's why it says about the new covenant, right? I'll put it into their what? In their mind. And then I'll put it in their heart. Basically, put it in a nutshell, the new covenant, basically wisdom. Put it that way. Drop down to verse 29. He goes through certain animals there that you can find it very fascinating. Can you hunt the prey for the lion? Or satisfy the appetite of the young lions? Verse 41, who provides food for the raven? When its young cry out to Elohe and wander about for lack of food. Can you do that, Job? Or would you want to do that, Job? Do you know the time? Chapter 39, verse 1. Do you know the time when the wild mountain goat bears young? Do you know the time, Job? No, we could say, oh, we scientifically follow, we scientifically analyze it, and we watch and we observe. Sure, we know the time. Really? What if it doesn't come when you planned for it to come? Can you make it come? Can you set the time in the womb for it to live? What if it has to stay there longer than normal? What if it doesn't have to stay there as long? We have that in normal human birth, right? Same thing happens to an animal. Job, do you know when? Do you know when the time is for that child, that one to have a young? Can you mark when the deer gives birth? No. Verse 5, who set the wild donkey free? Who loosened the bonds of the wild donkey? Can you do that, Job? Can you loosen the bonds that holds a wild donkey in one place? And can you free the wild donkey, Job? No. How about the wild ox? Verse 9, this is a very funny thing. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you, Job? Really, a wild ox, a wild bull, will it be willing to serve you? Will he bed in your manger? No, Job. Now, who do you think the wild ox will serve? What do you think God is saying to Job? Who will the wild ox serve? Elohe, Elohe. He gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in these things, and we have the kind of picture that no matter what happens, nothing in this world that he has created, he does not have a say-so about it and can change the life, the style, and the nature of the animal. I know it's a spiritual concept, but remember Ezekiel? No, I'm sorry, it's Isaiah, where it says, there'll come a time when a lion will do what? And eat straw. And there'll come a time when that little boy could play with a poisonous snake. There's a time when the wolf will be with a cow. Nothing. Nature, who could change that? Can you have the power of disciplining a wolf? And can you maybe make the wolf after a while change its nature that it will not attack? No. It's just, well, God created them that way. Verse 13, one of the funnier ones. This part I think is very funny. How many of you have seen an ostrich? This is a real description of it, because when you see one, you know, it's just exactly the way this guy, well, God created him that way. He's the wings of an ostrich, wave proudly. That's what they do, you know. They try to, you know, that's what they do. They waddle and they move their wings up and down with pride. But her wings are pinions, kindly. They're not like strokes. They're like strokes, wings. They can't take off. They can't fly. He says, and she leaves her eggs on the ground and warms them with the dust. She forgets that a foot can crush them, even hers. Or that a wild beast may break them. And she treats her young harshly as though they're not hers. That's what an ostrich is. It doesn't treat its bird, its little ones, that belong to her. It doesn't take care of them. It could care less. And her labor is totally in vain, and she not has any concern whatsoever. Why? Verse 17. What? Elohe did something. He says, Elohe deprived her of wisdom. Remember the other statement he said? Who gives wisdom? Oh. Now, the reason why, Job, you have wisdom in comparison to, look what I gave the ostrich. What if I gave you the wisdom of an ostrich? I bet he probably said the same thing in his mind. I don't want to be that dumb. And did not endow him with or her with understanding. What was the other statement he said? Something about, what is that, the heart? Give understanding to the, something like the heart? Understanding? No, this is not deliberately said. He didn't pick this bird out just because it popped into his brain. He picked this bird out to compare his creation of Job's brain and Job's heart compared to one of the dumbest things he's ever created. He created the ostrich because to teach mankind something. He created the ostrich just because he wanted a dumb animal. Everything he created is for mankind to understand Elohim, including the ostrich. And verse 9. We won't read the whole thing. I think verse 9 is one of the most fascinating things. We won't read the whole thing about the horse. Have you given the horse strength? The horse is nothing but solid muscle. It's a running machine. It's very strong. It runs. It doesn't gain weight. It doesn't get fat on it. It's just solid muscle. And when it starts running, man, it can go. And it's hard to stop a horse. It's hard for man to even control a horse. But once he's got that in there, have you clothed his neck with a thunder, that mane? We saw a picture, by the way, Ellie and I, she had on her internet, of a horse that's mane was so long, went all the way down to the ground. Wow! The horse could still run and do all the dog, but that mane didn't stop him. It's really long, and it's, the mane came forward down in front of his face. The horse didn't need a haircut. Well, we thought they were very fascinated about the mane and like thunder. And he said, now, the verse 20 is, can you frighten him like a locust? Now, have you ever walked up to a locust or a grasshopper? What does it do? It takes away. It's afraid of you. It runs away. Have you been able to frighten him like you do a locust? Look out. He just may snort back at you. Verse 26. Does the hawk fly by your wisdom, Job? Does he spread toward the south because you said go south? Does the eagle mount up at your command, Job, and make his nest on high, Job? Now, we understand all that because we have this great, wonderful hindsight about the life of Job. And why is God going through all this? Why is God saying this to Job for? Okay. And then God preserved this writing for Job's sake, who's now dead and buried and is no longer with us, for our understanding. And when we become intelligent, educated, got several PhDs with us, several MAs, BAs, and what's the other ones? I don't know all of them. And we have a bunch of titles, behind, a bunch of letters behind us. We do forget. We do forget. Chapter 40. This is where Job starts talking back. Carefully. Carefully. Moreover, verse 1, Yahweh answered Job and said, shall the one who condemns with the Almighty, or contends rather with the Almighty, correct him? Job, you are contending with me. You talked to your friends about contending with me, and you wanted to contend with me, you wanted to quarrel with me, you wanted your day in court with me. Really? What are you going to do that? You're going to try to rebuke Elohe? Yeah, let him answer it. Now Job answers. Humbly. But after all that terrifying whirlwind talking, not whirlwind going to nowhere, that whirlwind is destructive. That whirlwind destroys your thinking. That whirlwind destroys your mind. That whirlwind destroys, in a sense, your paradigm. And in this particular case, with God's might and strength and his words, he destroyed the paradigm of Job. Stopped him thinking the way he thought. Did he fear God? Yes. Did he love God? Yes. Was he a righteous man? Yes. Was he upright? Yes. But he lacked one thing. And this is what God was after. What was it? Who created wisdom, Job? Who gives understanding to the heart, Job? All right, this is the issue, right? Now Job comes back. He says, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will never answer. Yet twice, but I will not proceed no further. So there's two, he's got two issues against God, and forget it. He's not going to talk anymore. He's not going to accuse God or anything anymore at that point in time. And then, of course, Yahweh talked back to him, and he said, now prepare yourself like a man, Job. I will question you, Job, and you shall answer me, Job. Remember he said that very first? In the first chapter we read to date? Now, what happens? Would you indeed annul my judgment, Job? Will you condemn me that you may be justified, Job? See, those two things he said he spoke twice of. What were they? God's judgment and God's justification. Have you an arm like Elohe? Or can you thunder with a voice like him? And at that point in time, that's all they heard was the thundering voice. And of course, Job had not yet answered him, so he keeps on talking. Let's go down to verse 15 for a moment. Now look at the behemoth. That's an animal, massive, huge, large, mighty animal that existed, which I have made with you, or made with man at the same time, and eats grass like an ox. See, he stretches, his strength is in his hips, and his power is in the stomach muscles. He can eat. Verse 16 of that chapter. We're in the 40th chapter. We'll drop down to verse 15 and 16. And that one on 17. He, this behemoth, moves his tail like a cedar. Now, I know we saw some of these pictures we think dinosaurs are like. And the biggest monstrosity thing, this really long, long neck, really, really long, long, long tail. I'm not saying that's what it is, but you can almost kind of picture it's probably what it was. Job was fully aware of these things. They weren't prehistoric. He knew they were there, or at least knew of them. It says he moves his tail like a cedar and chews with this and swines. I forget what the word is. His thighs are thick knitted. His bones become as brass. His ribs are like a brass of iron. Pretty husky, powerful man, right? Or animal that he created. Now, we can imagine what it might have looked like. And, you know, they've dug up these bones and they try to make things look like it. You know, even in ancient Greece, when they dug up the bones, they tried to make them look something like they thought it might look like. That's why you sometimes have seen with wings on them. Because they believed they was wings because they found other bones with it. They thought it must have been part of them. And so they weird, you know, ancient Greece, had a museum, much like we have museums in our house or our country, to go look and see what these, quote, dinosaurs, prehistoric man, things look like. So it's nothing new. But now chapter 41. That's the last chapter. 42. Now, 41 talks about the draws out of the Leviathan with a hook. Can you get him on a hook? Can you catch this guy? Or his tongue with a line in your lower? Can you actually get the hook into his tongue and pull him out? Will he obey? Can you put a reed through his nose? You know, you put a ring in a bull's nose and pass, and you pull on that nose, and that is so tender, the bull will go wherever you want to go because it's so painful. And it travels with you as soon as you can travel because it can't take that pain. Earrings in the nose is painful. Have anybody grab, if you put an earring in your nose and someone grabs it, you to follow quickly. That's painful. Verse 3, when he makes many supplications to you, will he make many supplications to you, Job? Will he speak lofty to you, or softly rather to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will he make him as a servant forever? Can't make this guy serve you, Job. Who can? So who can? Who can make this animal, whatever it looked like, and describes it as very powerful, has its teeth, it's very strong and mighty on both sides, and even describes as, quote, fire coming out of his breath, something like a dragon, we think of, and all that kind of, who could tame it? No one. No one comes near. Who can? It is God who, it serves God, not God serves it. Very powerful. Last chapter. Now Job talks again. So it wasn't good enough when Job answered the first time, I am vile. Now God hits him with all more things, heavier things, more stronger things. Now he says, verse 2, I know that you can do anything and that no purpose can be withheld from you. You asked, who are you who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have what? Uttered what I did not understand. Now remember, understanding in the heart, not the brain, the heart. Things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Then Job shows, listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I will question you, and you will answer me. Remember that? Now Job says something. I have heard you by the hearing of the ear. Now my eyes see you, or in a sense perceive you. I understand you. Therefore, I abhorred, I'm bringing these words in, because this is abhorred myself, but basically means I have abhorred myself what I have spoken about you, or accused you about, and judged you about your judgment, and judged you about your giving wicked men praise and glory and not me. And he stops. Therefore, I repent. So what did Job have to repent of? Two main things. Judgment and, what was the other one? Justification. I can justify whomever I want, Job. Why are you questioning me? I justify the man who does things not good. I can do that because I am the one who created. You know that dumb bird? I'm the one that created, you know, that horse. I'm the one that created all that leviathan. I'm the one that created that behemoth. Job, you repented. Now, what is Job's approach to God now? I have to say, it's more than fear. I have to say, it is awestruck. He now understands. I have now heard you. I'm hearing you. I'm listening to you. No, everything you could do without me. And your judgment is right. Your justification is right. I may think in my past that when you justified a wicked man and then you judged me, a righteous man, you cursed me in your judgment, but you blessed this wicked man and nothing happened to him. You justified this wicked man and gave him no punishment, but you didn't justify me. You wouldn't even hear and tell me what my sins were. You didn't even tell me what my trials were. You didn't tell me what my transgressions were. You refused to tell me what I need to do to change. Remember, that's what he said. Remember that? We went through that, right? We as people, as human beings, have to be aware of that in ourselves. And be careful. God justifies who he wants to justify when he wants to justify them. It may be not on your, quote, time cycle. Basically, it's not. It's on his. Now, can a righteous man be corrected? What it says in Hebrew? Actually, I think you quoted it from one of the prophets. God corrects and chastises those he loves. So although it was bad news for Job, lost 7 sons, 3 daughters, he lost he lost 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 oxen, and 500 donkeys. Plus, all of his men, his army, his kingdom, they were all killed except for 4 who came and told him the story. I mean, that's a major, major loss. And why Job would look at that, because you, yourself, have to take a look and say, boy, if God did that to me, I'm going to say, but I didn't do anything wrong. Because Job was noted by his very first friend. Remember, his very first friend said, you are the one that had compassion upon those who need help. You're the one that goes out of your way to help people. You're the one that provides. And you were the one that gets rid of the oppressor in your kingdom. You refused to let anybody have an upper hand. And you always provided for them. That was a really good thing about Job, right? That's the uprightness. That's the righteousness of Job. That's the holy things of Job. But as Elihu said, Job, yourself righteous. So the book here is really about us. Of course, we don't have to go through all this stuff, the rest of it. Job had to give sacrifices for his 3 friends. And this is, I'll accept him because you were folly. The 3 friends were folly. He named them all off here. And it says there in verse 10, this chapter, it says, and you and Yahuwah restored Jacob's loss when he had prayed for his friends. Indeed, Yahuwah gave Job twice as much as he had before. Verse 12. Now Yahuwah blessed the latter of Job more than his beginning, for he had 14,000 sheep. He lost 7. God doubled it. 6,000 camels. He had 3. God, 3,000. He doubled it. He had 500 oxen. 1,000. 500 donkeys. 1,000. He also, verse 13, those who of us or anybody else who have judged wrongly the 7 sons and the 3 daughters that got killed, he also gave him 7 sons and 3 daughters he had before. No, new ones. And he got these 3 names, these 3 women. He tells what they are. We won't go through that today. I'm sorry, what? How old was Job when it's all afterward? After this, verse 16, Job lived after what? After what took place, his loss of his first 7 sons and 3 daughters, and all of his cattle, all of his sheep, all of his oxen, everything else, and down they had nothing in his power, in his military might, in his strength as a king. He did what? Lived for how many years? 140 years. That man died old. Wouldn't you think so? Looks like he might have died older than Moses. May have died older than maybe Abraham. Did you think that before? We don't know how old he was that he died, but he saw his children and grandchildren to the 4th generation. Well, that's quite something, 4th generation. How many of you are in this room have a 4th generation child? Nobody. That's rare to have a 4th generation. Sometimes you get by with 3 and you're old, but you might get 3. This guy, 140 years old, after all that stuff, after 140 years, he got to see his 4th generation. That's quite an interesting story, don't you think? So there is a blessing, but what was the lesson we have to learn? What is the lesson of Job? That God's on Job's case? That Job needed to know something. The 2 things he said he spoke against God. Right. Judgment and, we call it mercy, but justification. Those are pretty hard things. That's what I said. If you could read all of the book of Job and read what Job said, then you get an idea of exactly what God was after. And we ourselves, as human beings, have a tendency, because we are human beings, to see a group of people, maybe a sect different than our sect, as not with God. Really? What if God justifies them? And they still are the way they are. What if God put judgment for them, not against them? Are they still the same way? Who are we to say to God, you did wrong. You should have judged them harshly like you judged me, Job, or us. That's not what God does. Does that make sense to you about the book of Job? See it from another perspective, see it from an overall view. A lot of people don't understand why the book of Job was ever written because it looked like God was mean. Well, yes. I guess you could say he was mean. Did he justify Job? Well, of course he did. When did he do that? After Job understood the heart and purpose of God. When he understood that, then he was blessed. One comment and we'll call it quits.
I would say he was more than blessed in that Adonai actually came to him and spoke to him and told him these things.
Yeah.
I mean, revelation times a million, really. I mean, he really gave him revelation. That's more than a blessing.
Yeah, I tell you what God wants us to focus in on. Focus in on him to be the creator, primarily, but mostly his wisdom and his understanding.